You are Locked On Nets, your daily podcast on the Brooklyn Nets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Keep the trump blasting, toe tagging, I'm riding past them. Before you let them ride with the team, you got to ask them, who got snaps on the Petro? Keep it real, don't front, yo.
Welcome to the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm your host, David Wurzberger. This is your daily dose of Brooklyn Nets news, analysis, and interviews. Today, we're going to be discussing whether or not the Brooklyn Nets should trade for disgruntled Sacramento Kings forward Rudy Gay. Let's begin. No. Alright, but seriously, that's not the show today. We have part two of our interview with Sam Vecenie. Last time he talked us through every Nets prospect and relatively what we can expect from them this season and going forward. But this time we're going to talk about more general team building strategies and what the Nets are trying to do. And it's an interesting conversation. We grade Sean Marks on his job thus far. We look into maybe some of the things he's trying to do in looking for diamonds in the rough. And it's a good interview, so stay tuned to that. But first, let's handle some business. If you'd like to sponsor the show, you can email us at lockedonnets@gmail.com. We have affordable rates and reach a great deal of Nets fans, and we're getting more and more listeners every episode, so consider that, and maybe you know someone who would like to. If you're a fan and want to submit a question, see it answered, especially with training camp coming up, and next week we're doing Kenny Atkinson week, so if you have any questions about Brooklyn's new head coach, you could submit it to lockedonnets@gmail.com or tweet us at lockedonnets. Finally, if you're enjoying the show, think about sharing it with your friends. We're going to have an iTunes feed soon. You can subscribe there. Now to part two of our interview with Sam Vecenie.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Joining me now on Locked On Nets, back for another part, Sam Vecenie, wrote for CBS Sports, college basketball analyst, prospect savant, really knows his stuff. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. I had so much fun on the first one that I figured I would rejoin for number two.
Well, we appreciate it. So yesterday, if you guys didn't get to listen, we went through the Nets prospects, their young guys. Sam broke it all down for us, who to be optimistic about, who not to be, Anthony Bennett, cough. Anyway, we're going to move on to maybe some of the more general aspects of the Nets team building. And basically, with them having no draft picks and no real assets, they had to start from scratch looking for diamonds in the rough, late first-round picks, things like that. How would you grade Sean Marks on what he's done so far? He hasn't had a lot of time, but how he's done so far in collecting assets, young pieces?
Yeah, I mean, the Nets are just in such a bad place right now because this roster just isn't all that strong, especially beforehand, before the summer. This roster really wasn't all that strong. There wasn't enough there to even consider making a playoff run like the previous regime kind of figured that they could. Plus, you obviously, you have a swapping first round pick in 2017, no first round pick in 2018. I think that's the end of that. So you're kind of locked on 2019 here, so to speak, in terms of trying to get an elite talent. And that's obviously really difficult. It's a really difficult place for the organization to be. I think that Marks has done as admirable a job as you could really hope. I don't know that I've necessarily agreed with all of the draft evaluation decisions, but I don't think that you can really, look at what he's done and say he's done a bad job, because he cleaned up the cap sheet a little bit. They're going to have max cap space going into next offseason in a big way, obviously. It's a clean cap sheet. There's not a lot of talent, but they've gone out and made some smart, cost-efficient signings, so the product on the floor isn't a complete and utter, joke and disaster. Like, they signed Jeremy Lin and Trevor Booker. Those guys are very competent NBA players. Grievous Vasquez, another very competent NBA player. These guys are going to be able to at least not get the doors blown off of them every single night. And I think that that has value for a fan base, you know, in Brooklyn, still kind of adjusting to the move and, you know, still kind of trying to, you know, build a, I don't want to say like a true fan base, because I think the Nets do have a fan base that's pretty strong, but, you know, the
Careful,
move to
Sam,
Brooklyn,
they're listening.
No, I know the move to Brooklyn, though, I think was to try and activate a new portion of a fan base. Right. Yep. And I'm not sure that they've activated that fan base quite yet with all of the moves that they've made and the successes that they have and have not had. So I think that there's going to kind of be, you know, weathering the storm and steadying the ship until 2019 and then really starting to build this thing out.
So I'm going to ask a question and sort of answer it at the same time, because I think I know what you're going to say. Among rebuilding teams that I'm not, you know, not the Cavs, not the Warriors. Those guys don't really need young guys. Among teams that could use young guys, do the Nets have the worst young core in the league?
That's probably true, I would say.
It's not bad. It's not bad. It's just the worst.
I mean, it's pretty bad. Like, let's just be clear here. There's just no guy that I hang my hat on in terms of, you know, this young player is going to be, you know, a starting caliber player for sure, or like has a strong chance to be a starting caliber player. Like there's not a Jabari Parker level talent here. There's not even really like, I think I like, for instance, Denver has Gary Harris. Among all of the young guys on the Nets, I think I like Gary Harris a little bit more than all of them. So like, it's really difficult, I think, when that is your starting base of talent and then you have no, lottery picks basically until 2019. Like, it's a really difficult job, and I applaud what they've done so far, but it's a really difficult place to build from, I think.
Yeah, right now it's basically going to come down to which one of these D-League guys, second round picks, late first, can just shock everyone and turn into like a starter, a definite starter. And so finding diamonds in the rough is hard. Miami found one recently in Hassan Whiteside. And Josh Richardson, actually. Throw him in, too.
Second-round pick, number 40 overall. You know, that was a kid that had a lot of talent at Tennessee. You know, he was a really good slasher, learned to shoot the ball late in his career, and he was always an all-conference-level defender. You know, I look at this Nets roster, and, you know, Caris LeVert, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, those guys can be, you know, similar to what Richardson brings at the very least.
Right, so I was going to ask you, we know how the Nets are going to try to find diamonds in the rough. Again, picks, the ones they have.
They went out and got the 2017 pick from Boston in that deal. They have a 2017 pick from Indiana. Having said that, they lost their second-round pick to Atlanta, but they should have 2 second-round picks in 2017 that will be, you know, in the middle of the second round.
So let me ask you, is it a total crapshoot to try and find these guys that everyone else overlooked, or are there some, maybe the tiniest of indicators that teams might be looking at?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think that certainly some organizations do a better job of it than others. You know, I look at Golden State, I look at San Antonio. I think those teams have done a pretty good job of it. You know, Miami, like you said, has also done a tremendous job of it. They've got Tyler Johnson, $40 million a year, or not a year. Is it $52 million contract? Sorry.
$40 million a year would be pretty something for Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's a $52 million contract that he just signed. So, like, you know, there are organizations that do it better than others in terms of what they look for. I think that there are definitely some statistical indicators that you can look at, you know, guys with really high rebounding rates or really just one exceptional skill that they can hang their hat on. I think those guys can be valuable. And I think that guys who have a really well-rounded skill set nowadays are also quite valuable. Like, you look at a Josh Richardson, like I just said, he could kind of do a little bit of everything at Tennessee. He ended up playing point guard his last year there. And that really diversified his skill set. So I think that those are the two things that I look at, either be elite at one skill or be pretty good at everything. And those are actually really difficult guys to find late in the draft. I think that the Nets are hoping that, you know, at number 20, that's what they're getting out of Caris LeVert. I'm not necessarily as sold as some others are, but, you know, I'm definitely not perfect as far as scouting these guys. So maybe Sean Marks and, you know, Kenny Atkinson can really get the most out of him.
Who would you say, if you had to hang your hat on one of these guys on the Nets roster, who do you really think could surprise people? Who's their best prospect in your eyes?
See, it's really hard because I typically consider prospects as like part of an expected value equation, right? Like ceiling times likelihood to reach ceiling. Mm-hmm. You know, Chris McCullough to me has the highest ceiling out of anyone on the Nets right now. I mean, he's 6'9", 6'10", forward who can shoot the ball a little bit and has great athleticism at that size. And hopefully he can continue to develop his body and become the kind of force that, you know, they're hoping for. But, you know, in terms of likelihood of reaching that ceiling, I'm less sure on him being an NBA player in 2 years than I am anyone else on this roster. So, like, in terms of best prospect, I'd probably call it Rondae Hollis-Jefferson all around because I feel like I know for a fact that he's an NBA player in terms of being able to stick in the NBA. And I can see him developing into, if you squint, like a solid starter, but, you know, more likely like a really, really energetic, solid bench guy.
All right. Now it's only been, you know, hasn't even been a year of Sean Marks, but I'm going to look at some of the, it looks like he's going for a few trends in the young guys he's picking up. And I want you to tell me whether you think it's a coincidence, whether it's real, and what that might mean to their team. First of all, most of these prospects are wings. You talk about Kilpatrick, Whitehead, Hollis Jefferson, LeVert. What does that say to you? Do you think that's something that they want to build up on a lot of wings, maybe hoping one of them would? I mean, it doesn't make sense to try and develop a center right now with Brook Lopez there. So,
yeah, I wonder if that's out of necessity or out of, you know, a real organizational philosophy to try and build up strength on the wings. I think that, you know, if you can find a very valuable wing player, it's one of the most valuable things you can find in the league. But it's very difficult to find those kind of guys if you look at the strength of the shooting guard position in the NBA right now. So I don't know that I would necessarily say it's like a thing I am certain he's looking for, but it's possible that that could be an organizational philosophy that, you know, Marks is looking for these wings who can do a lot of different things, like a Caris LeVert potentially could, even though I don't necessarily buy it.
All right, now moving on to the next one. LeVert and McCullough, they both had injuries that basically turned them off to some teams. McCullough had the ACL, LeVert the foot problems. Do you think the Nets are trying to go big and see if they can nail on these risky picks by going after the injured guys?
Well, it's kind of difficult to say because, you know, McCullough, I mean, that's an old regime selection, right? He was a 2015 draft pick.
That's true.
So I'm not sure if maybe some of the same scouts are in the building and they're, you know, kind of weighing cost benefit of risk reward and deciding that these injured guys are worth it. I do think that Caris LeVert, you know, some people think he is a very high level talent and think he was, you know, again, just on talent alone, absolutely worth the top 20 pick. And the Nets, I'm sure that their doctors looked at him and decided that the cost to benefit ratio was a very worthwhile expenditure for them. So, you know, I don't know that I would say that it's a trend that Marks is trying to go high upside, but I will say that if I was the Nets, I would be going high upside with everything that I do right now. You know, take risks on guys like a Caris LeVert or like a Chris McCullough or like an Isaiah Whitehead that, you know, maybe their ceilings are a little bit higher than someone like a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson for me, or like a, a Randy Foy who's, you know, settled in as a solid seventh man off the bench. I wouldn't want to take seniors whose ceiling is
high risk, high reward is lower. What you're trying to say.
I would want higher risk, high reward players.
Right. All right, another one for you. A lot of local guys. Isaiah Whitehead, straight out of Brooklyn. It seems like one of those narrative things, you know, that maybe doesn't have an impact, but does it? Am I wrong here?
That's a really difficult question, because I think that Isaiah Whitehead being born in Brooklyn, I don't know that they would admit this, but I would guess that it had a role in him being selected, because I think that he was absolutely worth where they picked him, like 100%. If I was the Nets, I probably would have done the same thing in terms of the business side of things and in terms of the skill side of things, because they could use more creators from the perimeter. I think that Whitehead's going to get a shot there early, but I think that it would be naive to not consider the fact that, you know, business absolutely plays a role in these decisions, and Whitehead being born in Brooklyn for a team that is probably going to win, you know, 20 games, 15 games this year. You know, Whitehead being born in Brooklyn is a selling point to a fan base that may or may not have gotten out to see the team otherwise. So I have no problem with them doing it, and I think his talent level dictated being selected at 40.
All right. And with these young guys, atmosphere and culture is a big thing. And obviously Sean Marks hasn't been around long enough to maybe establish a long-running culture like the Spurs or the Lakers. But how would you sort of describe how good of an atmosphere this would be for the young guys this year with the Nets?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically an impossible situation to even gauge, right? Just because, like, new coach, you know, a new amalgamation of veterans who we have no idea if they're going to get along or not get along. You know, a mix of young guys like Caris LeVert and Hollis Jefferson and, you know, guys like that, and Isaiah Whitehead. Like, I can't even begin to guess what the culture is going to look like there.
Let's talk about this, because Kenny Atkinson's coming from Atlanta. He did a good job of developing young guys over there, so sure. He has had that background with him. Sean Marks coming from the Spurs, so you would guess he wants to establish a Spurs-like culture. And there aren't a ton of veterans on the team, but Randy Foy, Jeremy Lin, Brook Lopez, I'm pretty sure they're well liked around the league. So it's got to be promising.
These guys are all considered like professionals, yeah. Right? Like Caribas Vasquez is considered a professional. Randy Foy, I mean, you will not hear a bad word from anyone around the league about Randy Foy. And Brook Lopez is a guy that a lot of people like around the league in terms of dealing with him with the media. I don't really know what he's like in the locker room necessarily. But Trevor Booker is another one. Trevor Booker in that Utah locker room was considered awesome from what I've been told. So, you know, like you said, these guys are all culture guys. And Sean Marks, I think it's very clear, is going to try and build a developmental culture up. And, you know, the D-League team is going to be there, and that's another way to build up a developmental culture. There are so many guys that the Spurs have, you know, brought through that Austin system. And I think that you're going to see a similar kind of hope that the Nets can continue to use that kind of acumen and use the guys that they have already to try and build a very fun, very strong developmental culture. It's just very difficult to tell what this particular roster is going to be early on, just because there are so many shifting parts.
Sure, but here's hoping. Sam Vecenie, thank you very much for joining once again. I didn't let you plug in the first part your Twitter. Plug somewhere people can follow you, read your stuff.
You can find me at Sam_Vecenie on Twitter, Vecenie. I'm honestly just trying to relax a little bit right now before the season. I'm not really writing all that much. So, you know, if you want to find my writing once the season begins, you'll be able to find it there.
All right. Thanks again, Sam. Appreciate it.
Yep. Anytime.
And that wraps it up for today's episode of Locked On Nets. Thank you very much for listening. Come back tomorrow, because we'll be talking to Danny LaRue, CBA expert, and he's going to talk to us about Brook Lopez, because he's likely not going to be on this team come the end of the season. And we're going to talk about what the Nets might be able to get for him in a trade and when that might happen. Thank you very much. See you next time. Let me get it one time. Fake the funk. Keep it real. Don't fake the funk. Let me see them heads high. Fake the funk.